everyone, welcome to CommanderCast, Season 10, Episode 6, recorded on June 20th, 2013. This is the weekly EDH/Commander podcast about community, strategy, and technology. Available every week on mtgcast.com, quietspeculation.com, iTunes, and our headquarters, CommanderCast.com. Brought to you free of charge, without advertising or sponsorship by an awesome staff of volunteers, plus myself. Slight amendment on the advertising since we do carry that 10-second ad to help support MTGCast. But I'm okay with that. You should be too, because they're an awesome site. Chewy's a real cool guy. And they have hosting fees they need to pay for. Just like we do. Isn't that right, Calvin?
Yeah, that's right. Every once in a while, you know, you got to send a shout out to the people that do real good things for you for free.
Yep.
So, like, you know, much love to MTGCast and Chewy for posting up our extensively horrible show.
Yeah. And even quietspeculation.com. I don't really go to their website all that much, but they do send some pieces every now and then if you're a subscriber. They give you some things to think about, you know, just if you're looking to move your cards. But enough of that plugging. I'm William, a.k.a. Blue Ram. I'm the podcast director and producer. And he's Calvin Russell, my co-host. Calvin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Sitting here choking on a slice of pizza.
What'd you do? Order takeout?
That's okay, though, because it takes more than cheese to stop me.
No. I was over at my parents' house for my sister's birthday. My mother likes to make a lot of the homemade stuff, so like she had homemade pizza, which is great and all, mm-hmm. but it's so hot that the cheese keeps falling off the pizza part, and it keeps burning your mouth.
Now, see, that's when you take it and put it in the fridge and let it kind of chill off a little bit.
That's what I should have done, yeah. So, joining us... Oh, yeah, you got a thing?
No, that was me, like, slightly burping while choking.
Careful, I can't perform Heimlich through the internet, sir.
No, so, that's okay, I don't want you to lift my harm anyway.
Okay. So, our final contributor to the actual website, we've got Brian Lucas on with us. How are you doing today, sir?
Okay.
Now, if you might... You might notice that Brian sounds a bit like Bane at the moment, but I can. But you know, with this is all really done on a shoestring budget. All of our stuff here is free. Skype is free. Skype recording is free. Audacity is free. Everything's free. So we're not necessarily going to have the best quality of all times, but that's okay. We can still understand you. Like,
quick, Brian, say, Luke, I am your father. Come on, you can do it, Brian. I'm putting my faith in you, sir. Don't let me down.
Luke, I am your father.
not as deep as James Earl Jones, but it still has that effect.
He sounds a bit like Bane, you know? You adopted Commander, but I was born with them.
Okay. So, before every show, we like to start things off. And since it seems to be an ever-changing type of answer, Brian, what is your favorite commander this week?
All-time favorite is Xur. This week, Kresh.
Wait, what was that last one?
Kresh this week, but my all-time favorite is Xur.
Okay, you said Kresh, as in Kresh the Bloodbraided?
Yes, Kresh the Bloodbraided.
Okay. So, he's not one I see a whole lot, actually.
Yeah, I've been trying a new build with him that's a bit more Voltron and combo than most of them are.
Okay, now you said your favorite, but your all-time favorite is Xur.
Yes, Xur the Enchanter.
Now...
I can feel the hate flowing through everyone already.
Now, I have to ask, because at the time of this recording, Eric's article just went up, where he actually has to try and defend Xur against every just rationale in his body. So I've got to ask, why Xur?
He was my first commander. Was the only one of two recolor ones that were around the time I started. The other one I had was Garzazal, and to me she's just boring, so Xur it was.
All right. So, but what about Xur specifically? Was it that made you pick him up and just want to play with him?
Tutoring is good.
Okay, that's a good answer as any. Unless you had more to that.
That's about it.
Yeah, tutoring tends to be really good. Okay, so I'm going to check this real quick.
It helps fuel my necropotence addiction.
Which one do you use? Do you use the regular or the front of the vault one?
Regular. Oh, Ice Age.
I can't stand that. I went up and used the front of the vault version. Okay, so if you want to hit any of us up, I'll have our social feeds in the show notes. Now for some quick news before we go into the rest of the show. Now, as always, I need to repeat myself to make sure everyone else gets the word out there. We are changing our name and completely rebranding the show for next season. We will still be at CommanderCast.com. You'll still be able to find our content Mondays through Fridays, including our weekly podcast, bringing you community strategy and technology. But we will have a different name, a different feel, and maybe a different look to the website. I still need to talk to Phil about that. Damn. I really need to remember to talk to that guy. Second of all, we are currently getting ready to hold... Well, right now we're still in the preparation process of just trying to figure out what we're going to offer as incentive. But we are going to hold a contest for the new show's theme song. Now, as far as what I'm looking for the show, I think... Now, me personally, I'm looking for something kind of anime-ish. Actually, something that's got kind of a build-up to it. But if you think you have a great idea for the new show that we're putting up there, go ahead and send it in. We should have our prizes lined up by next week. And what do you think, Calvin? Now that we've actually settled on the name, should we go ahead and start announcing it? I mean, that is kind of relevant to the theme song.
Am I muted?
You're not muted.
I'm muted. For a moment I thought I was still muted, man. I think it'd be perfectly fine to like start going with the name now, as long as you're sure that this is the name that we're going to be going with.
Oh yeah, I don't think there's any question, because this is like the name. Like
okay, so
well, hold on. Do you want to go ahead and put this in two parts? Like I introduced the first half of the name, and you're the second.
So it's going to be
The new show is going to be Command.
And Conquer. Conquer.
Yeah, I'm the commander. He's the conqueror. And together, we're going to bring you one kick-ass show. If I got the new template, I would totally put that into the fuse section. Because now, see, I love the name Command. This was actually sent in by one of our listeners who by the time. He might be here, and this might be on episode 2 or 3 at the moment. But if I could pronounce this correctly, Adam Lukmani, I think. Yeah, Adam from the UK, just threw out a list of names out there, and Command and Conquer is really awesome. So that's the one we're going to. A lot better than what we're going to go with, which was the Command Zone. But then that had the problem of actually sharing the name with another blogger that we've affiliated it with in the past, and I don't really want that. Mixing and matching. So we're going to go with Command and Conquer, which I like for a couple. I like it for a couple reasons. First of all, it reminds me of like those old-time Risk games that you would play back in middle school or elementary school, where everyone would just be sitting around the board, just grinding away for hours, playing politics, making deals, and then stab each other in the back when the timer's right. Pretty much how any given game of Commander goes for me. And second of all, it sounds like an awesome split card.
It reminds me more like Risk. The game of global domination where you convince your friends that you're actually doing nothing when in all honesty you're dominating the world.
Yep, that's exactly what I said. See, we're already on the wavelength.
Yeah. Risk. Fucking love that game.
I do too, but no one wants to play with me. I don't get it. I mean, I haven't played it since elementary school, but no one wants to sit around playing a game for like 3 hours. Like, I don't get that.
Your risk game takes three hours.
Oh, hold on, Calvin.
Your Risk game takes 3 hours.
Maybe. Like I hear they have a new new faster version, but. Brian?
The only time I've ever like last 3 hours is when I'm like stuck with like half the world conquered and only one other opponent. And even then, I still kind of consider it a moral victory because I know I'm going to win eventually. They just haven't figured it out yet.
Brian, you had some?
Yeah, I've never actually played Risk. No one around here seems to have it, and I have to find someone to that has it to be able to play it anyways. So.
Ah, that's a shame. Okay.
I'll take your word for it.
Yep. So, Command and Conquer. I'm the commander. Calvin's the conqueror. That's going to be the name of our new show. I'm going to make sure Chewie knows that by the end of the season so that we can start go ahead and start putting up a brand new iTunes account. Just, it's weird, you know? You don't necessarily want to start from scratch because you don't want to have to go through all that work of losing all your listeners and then force them to go through a new thing. But at the same time, you kind of have to do that because you're just trying to redefine yourself, you know? I don't know. So, and that about takes care for our announcements. In our queue today, today we're going to be talking about the Planeswalkers. Not anyone in particular, just kind of in general. You know, why do people like them? Who are our favorites? Second of all, we've got Forecast and Detain. Calvin's going to go ahead and talk about how these couple mechanics have been playing together with some Azorius power. Azorius power. And finally...
Yeah, this is going to end up being the next thing I got to do, right? Go get my deck.
Oh, yeah. You go get your deck, Calvin. Finally, in our technology segment, we're featuring the Lauren 5 in a retro cycle review. This actually sounds like something that Annie and Cass might have done when he was still running the show, but I honestly can't remember. I can't necessarily find anything that proves they did. And even if they did... I think everyone on the show's attitudes towards him is substantially different enough from when the original review would have taken place that we can kind of justify it. Particularly since Andy hated Planeswalkers and I actually really love them. So, we've got that going. All this and more on today's Commander Cast.
Now he's completely left the cast. He's like, I'm done. Can't deal with this crap. People constantly getting up and walking away. This guy's on mute and doesn't even know it. And who plays Ashlyn the Pilgrim anyway? Am I right?
Wait. What do you mean who plays Ashlyn the Pilgrim?
No, it's just like a part of a rant that I'm pretty sure Brian's having in the background that he's quit the cast. He's like, you know what? I'm done. I'm not writing for the site. I'm finished with this crap. Ashlyn sucks. Ib Nation can go kiss my rear end and randomness of all kinds of sort. Whose baby is this?
So, I was recently having a discussion with my girlfriend, who was... She's gotten into Magic recently. She's bought a few booster boxes and made herself a few decks. The one thing that she doesn't necessarily get is why people are so big on the Planeswalkers. To her, there's really no difference between a Planeswalker and a really powerful mage, except for the spark and being able to travel from world to world, right? Which is pretty much how Wizards has made the Neo Planeswalkers. She was actually much more interested in them and just their whole story when they were near godlike beings. And as she argued, the igniting of a spark was supposed to be a rebirth. You know, it's supposed to be this, you're coming into this amazing great power. You're ascending almost. And I can't really disagree with her. You know, I support Wizards in this revamping of the Planeswalkers in order to make them cards and make them much more relatable characters. But I know where she's coming from. So, for today's home version, I'm asking everyone what their favorite Planeswalker is.
Hey Chuds, it's that time again. Time for the Commander Cast home version. This week's question is, based on personal criteria, who's your favorite Planeswalker and why? Our boy Zamgora, aka Jim, says for obvious art reasons, Liliana the Veil. For actual gameplay awesomeness, Venser the Sojourner. Our boy Jakey J says the Johnny Vengeant has a special place in my heart. Our boy Alexi B, Vraska. Excellent spot removal and those tokens paired with a doubling season and Triumph of the Wards has won me some games. Our boy Steven EW says my favorite Planeswalker is Venser. His abilities are deceivingly powerful and provide a ton of options. And our boy Mikey D says Baby Jace for me. Low converted mana cost can be helpful for everyone and ultimate isn't super D-bag material. That's always good choices there. Up on the Facebook end, we've got our boy Aaron D. Nickel Brolos. Stories are never cool unless you have an insanely evil, omnipotent planeswalker dragon to fight. Okay, our boy Henrik O. says Urza because he is Urza. I might have to agree with my boy there. Our boy Willie B. Character Liliana. It's fun watching her dig herself deeper with an endless stream of bad choices. And for the card, Garrick Relentless. The card does so many things in interesting ways. And I love how the pack has a hybrid frame for flavor reasons, but everything Veilcurse does could actually be green-black hybrid. Our boy Joshy B says Tybalt because he's a handsome devil. There's a Smith's reference for you young kids. Our boy Kimmy CN says Cassandra and her flaming hairdo. She's never stupidly busted, wink wink, and she's not the reason we hate planeswalkers a lot of the time, and she's burning hot. Okay, calm down there a little bit. And we'll round it out with our boy NDF. I'd have to go with Jace, because it's Jace, and after that, original Sorin. Embodied my first and still favorite deck so perfectly. Mono Black Kill Control. There you have it, kids. You want to be on this here thinger? They post a question on the Twitter, on the Facebook. Answer it, be awesome, you be on it. Later.
And now that we've got that out of the way, that's really... There actually were quite a few different responses, but the overwhelming majority of them happened to be from gameplay reasons. You know, a lot of people like Liliana because she's a strong planeswalker, but they also like her perceived personality. I say perceived because it seems like a lot of people really sex her up more often than not. Do you get that impression, Calvin?
Who, Liliana? No, actually, Liliana is more like of a very... If you get into, like, the Vorthos view of it, she actually is a pretty sexual-based character.
Yeah, but... I'm getting...
I mean, granted, the way people are putting her out there is, like, you know, like, the way people make it seem, they make her seem like a whore, but it's more or less... It's not like her being whorish or just, like, throwing herself out there in Moulin Rouge style for the money. Even though that is probably one of the reasons she wants something, like, she just wants the money. But, you know, it's not the key way she usually uses her sexuality.
Yeah, like the way Liliana is canonically, or at least my interpretation of her, is that she's more calculating and manipulative. She does things if it gets her what she wants. Like, she'd be perfectly willing to, you know, just blow a kiss someone's way if it turned them into a slobbering jewel slave that served her purposes. Like, I don't really like Polish's interpretation of her at all, which is kind of this crazy stalker girl. Especially for Jace. Like, I'm not a fan of that at all.
Actually, technically, Jace is like the stalker out of the two.
Is he? I haven't had a chance to read Artifice, Test of Metal.
Well, real quick, a quick breakdown of how, like, their relationship is. Jace and Liliana have this kind of, like, on-again, off-again dating situation, and Jace has this feeling like he can help her break loose of whatever the badness is, like the demon bonds and shit she has that makes her evil.
Well, that's not really
he wants to try to help her find other alternative ways to get out of her demon pats, while her only way out is basically find demons and murder them. And he wants to try to go like a more safe, here's like another way to get out of the contract loophole, I can help you, let me save you kind of view, where she's kind of got this whole don't try to save me, I'll save myself.
Yeah. That definitely works. But, where was I going with? Oh, yeah. So, yeah. A lot of people are really... A lot of their likes and dislikes of the planeswalkers, I find, tend to be kind of based on their mechanical strength. Especially people who play in tournaments regularly and such. Like, I don't really see a lot of people... Chandra definitely has a fan base, for example. But it's not as popular as, say, Lily's or Tamio's. Or even Raul Zarek's, because those planeswalkers are just more playable in more competitive environments, you know?
Apparently, Tamio actually didn't have much of a fan base. She was just good tournament playable.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, is that eventually the card's strength translates into a growing fandom. Because, you know, people see the good cards, and they actually start to like him. You know, no, I don't... there isn't a tournament player alive, I think, that actually likes Tybalt. Because no one likes the random discard. But people who are more attuned to the flavor or the lore are actually much more agreeable to Tybalt I participate in the Tumblr role-playing community, and Tumblr has a decent following. He's actually a pretty cool character to play with story-wise. Card-wise, not so much, and I think that kind of translates into a lower support system for him. It's also where, another thing I'm not really a fan of is this Forever Alone Nisa meme that's popped up, which again is something that Polish does. You know, I'm not going to rag on him or anything, but that is one of my most hated memes that has just come out of Magic fandom in general. Nisa came out in a time when Lightning Bolt wasn't standard, so she never really had a chance to be competitive. And she kind of forced you to search for a card that was very specific. So if you got her, but you didn't get Nisa's Chosen in limited format, she didn't do a whole lot.
Well, me personally, I love Nisa. Nisa Ravain is one of the few Planeswalkers that I actually really, really enjoyed. Due to the fact that she's the way that I kind of feel a Planeswalker should have been. I mean, granted, the two loyalty sucks. I mean, she should have started three. But my view for Nisa is that she's the kind of Planeswalker where if you want a deck to use this card, you kind of have to work around it. You can't just randomly slot this card into any random green deck. You can't randomly just throw it into any random red deck because it's a character. And this is things that this character is interested in. And this is things that this character does. It's kind of like seeing a Garruk that doesn't make beast tokens. I mean, granted, yes, you could put Garruk in any random green deck, but he would shine better in a deck that actually uses those tokens for more than just, a 3/3 body.
Yeah, I could see that. Did you have something, Brian?
Well, first, I'm going to pause so you can edit that and click that link. If you haven't seen it.
I have seen that, actually. I'm definitely going to have to put this in the show notes, but for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, Steve Argle actually did an alter of Lilliana the Veil, which he did do the original art for, and she's getting mauled by a pile of squirrels right now. It's actually pretty awesome, just because squirrels... are you seeing this, Calvin? I know you're on your phone, but...
Wow, that is actually pretty amazing. It looks like they ate her clothes off.
Yeah, it's amazing they know where to stop, though. Like, I bet if you just ripped all the squirrels off right now, she would have, whatever remnants of a dress in bikini form.
Nah, I'm pretty sure if you ripped all those squirrels off right now, they'd just be, bones underneath there.
Ooh. That's a scary thought.
It's a photo that looks sexy, but when in reality, oh god, it's horrifying.
Okay, yep. So, go ahead, Brian.
So, first, I'm just going to quote from my article this week that Lilliana is an unholy sex icon spawned from the deepest nether regions of hell.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that. And second?
When they say dark realms, they mean that.
What was I going to say? Yeah, I agree that Nisa is more what I think Planeswalkers should be. They shouldn't be so utility.
Yeah, well, what do you mean by utility?
You can throw Jace, original Jace, in any blue deck, pretty much.
Well...
That support their colors that can use them, some of them are.
Okay, but I think the key of this matter is that Nisa is actually more tribal than the other Planeswalkers are. Nisa is specifically a Planeswalker that deals with elves. If she had her own deck, it would be the dual deck elves. She's just all about the elves, and so she only has so many decks that she can be put into. Even if you're playing her in Commander, that her plus one is just for elves, so you're almost playing elf tribal. And getting Nisa's Chosen, even though it's a one of, you'd still... It's still an elf. Whereas the other Planeswalkers are just kind of themed over different things. A Johnny is more life themed, and Lilliana is more discard themed.
Well, the thing for, what I'm saying, Nisa is very themed based. Yeah, she's tribal. And what is it? The original Ajani, actually, most of the Ajani's are all pretty, like, you know, life-based and life-gaining. But in the same token, like, with the original, like, because Ajani's main goal is he's supposed to, like, not be a planeswalker that helps himself. He's a planeswalker that uses his power. His main powers are used to help others, you know, story-wise, anyway. So from a character perspective, Ajani's cards kind of work, because his whole premise is to help others. It's not really him doing anything except for, like, when he's angry. When he's angry, watch out, because he will shoot you in the face with a lightning helix. But yeah, other than that, like, yeah, he's usually trying to end to, like, oh, you over there, you're going to get a +1 counter. Oh, you over here, I want you to have vigilance. Because he's more about the team, which is a kind of a white-based theme. But then when you look at somebody like the original Jace Bellerin, he really has, like, no major, like, theme outside of, hey, let's draw you some cards, and let's draw you some more cards. And then when we're done, we're going to kill your opponent. Because that's all he really does. I mean, granted, it's kind of there, but it's not really like he's got, like, a theme going. He's not really trying to be, like, the mind mender. I mean, recent Jaces have actually gotten better. But, you know, the premise is, like, most of the tournament play planeswalkers don't usually follow themes. You don't really see a Johnny Goldmane in many decks. I mean, he's had his time in the sun, like, for, like, a month, but that was about it. Nissa, she had her time in the sun when that, what was it? One of the guys from Star City had made, like, a Eldrazi Elf deck or something like that, which lasted for, like, about a good month and a half. But they don't get, like, the continual tournament play like a Jace Bellerin or Liliana of the Cursed Veil or something, like, along those lines.
Go ahead, Brian.
So, about the consistency of abilities, one of the reasons Liliana of the Dark Realms was poorly received was she didn't have anything to do with discard like the other two. They've started talking about having more consistency in abilities, making them more similar to their old versions. Like, the two Gideons both become creatures, that's their thing.
Yeah, that definitely was a big part of, well, public reaction is part of what helps shape these planeswalkers, right? Like, Tybalt is the first 2-drop planeswalker, but they were afraid of that so much so that they kind of nerfed his discard. Like, they were already doing rummaging in the Avacyn Restored set and a little bit beforehand. They could have made him discard a card first and then draw, like Red Rummaging does. But because they were so scared of a 2-drop planeswalker, they kind of nerfed it a bit. And the audience reaction has been, this guy sucks, why would we play him? So they know they have to kind of push that envelope. Planeswalkers, as a whole, have to fill a lot of roles. Like, they have to appeal to Johnnies and Timmies and Spikes. They have to be these premier cards that you could play turns with, and they have to be creative, and they have to do a whole bunch of different things because these are the faces of Magic. So, going into the crux of the discussion here, why is it that you think people actually do like the planeswalkers above just, say, normal legendary creatures?
Well, I'll take the mic up real quick. The reason I think people like the planeswalkers are for twofolds. The first one is for flavor. These are characters that continuously repeat and randomly keep showing up, and you can kind of, like, follow their progression and story. With a legendary creature, with the way the stories are set up, and we go from realm to realm and realm to realm, unless that legendary creature happens to be from the Weatherlight Saga, he is not going with us from Kamigawa to Zendikar to Ravnica to wherever. That legendary creature stays where he's at. Like, if we go back to Shards of Alar, or go back to Alar, the actual, like, realm, in another year, chances are you're not going to see a guy like, damn it, what's the bad guy?
Boas? Boas, Grievan, like, which bad guy are you talking
about? Think about the Bant legendary creature, the 4-drop. You know who I'm talking about. Exalted Rafik. Yeah, there we go. I don't know why that name slipped me. But the thing is, like, when we go back to there, chances are Rafik might not actually be a card. He might not actually be a character. I mean, Nico Bolas, yeah, he'll always be around. But we can't be guaranteed that the legendary creatures we see will be back. And yeah. the second reason why planeswalkers are kind of popular, I believe, is because, you know, they're pretty cool. You get three abilities that you can continuously use as long as you can kind of keep them alive.
Yes, that's very true. I do remember reading that this is a big part of why they needed to make planeswalkers cards, because they needed characters that you could follow from block to block. And so that connection too. You know, you need to be able to recognize Chandra anytime she shows up to a block, because she's the hero of that story. She's the one that we're going to be following. And not every set... When we did Return to Ravnica, I was very happy to see Taysa come back. Were you happy to see Taysa come back, Calvin?
When we did Return to Ravnica? Who, Taysa?
Yeah.
Taysa was okay.
Yeah.
I personally enjoyed Jace, though.
Well, yeah. We saw Jace back in Zendikar when he came out in World Wake as the Mind Sculptor. And then he came back as the protagonist for Return to Ravnica. But then for Legendary Creatures, we had like Niv-Mizzet, Hesperia. We had some of them come back. That's not a guarantee, though, because these guys are kind of the...
Human.
Yes, some of these guys are human. Like, we don't see Augrish Koss or Tolsimir. Well, some of them were killed off in the original. But we see Taysa come back of the human... And she's the only one. Gerard came back, but he was in the story first, immigrated to actual card canon, and he was a zombie lich was besides. Go ahead, Brian.
So, another reason Planeswalker is different from legendary creatures, aside from Gideon, you're not going to get your Planeswalker murdered. Repeatable effects that aren't easy to deal with.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about a wrath of God taking your planeswalker out just because you played him.
Yep. And that's definitely another thing. I've actually... My American new mod deck is... It's almost turning into a Super Friends deck, kind of, because it's got a lot of the planeswalkers. Like, part of the reason I built it was just because I wanted to put in a bunch of planeswalkers I wanted to play with on a little more frequently. I put in Elspeth and Karn and Tamiyo and Jace's. And the deck does tend to run a lot of board wipes, so planeswalkers are actually really hard to deal with. I actually managed to get Karn to the point where he was. Calvin, could you mute your phone? I'm actually getting a bit of a feedback.
For me?
Okay, I think that works. So, yeah, I was actually able to protect Karn with just nothing but board wipes to the point where he had, like, 26 loyalty on him. And the only reason I didn't restart the game was because there was no reason not to. He was just exiling everything on site.
Yeah, I did something similar with my Thraxamund or Grixis deck. I actually have a Planeswalker curve all the way from 2 to 8, one on each point. Just because I could.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the other good things about, like, planeswalkers for the most part. Because when you deal with the planeswalkers, you always have, like, what is it, like, three options at the least? I don't think they've had any planeswalkers that had less than two abilities at the point. Outside of, what was it, that one Garrick that only had two abilities on the front?
Yeah, and even then he had three on the back.
But even then he had three on the back. And the main thing for it is, like, they're better... Like, planeswalkers are usually better in enchantments because, you know, you have your enchantment and a planeswalker, you can usually do three or more things, while your enchantment usually only does one. Your legendary creature usually does about two or three things if they're lucky. And usually your planeswalker does three or four amazing things. They give you board presence, they control the board, they give you cards, they do this, they do that. And after you originally pay for the original mana cost to get them down, you never really have to pay anything else again. Whereas with your legendary, you know, oh, you want to activate this ability where it's going to cost you two blue and a red. Oh, you want to do this, you're going to have to, you know, at least get your opponent to draw a card so that Niv-Mizzet can see that card and then do damage. But this, you've got hoops you got to jump through for a legendary creature. With your planeswalkers, the only hoop you have to do is get back to your main phase.
Okay. So I think it's about that time where we actually start talking about some of our favorite Planeswalkers. We've already done the home version, and we've already heard about your Planeswalkers. So real quick, going around the table, I'm going to start with mine. My favorite Planeswalker is actually Elspeth. If you want to talk about card versions of her, then it's probably Elspeth Tyrell, the one that got released in Scars of Meriden. Elspeth, to me, when I first saw her, she was just an awesome card that made soldier tokens at a time when I was really big into just filling the board with tokens in 60-card decks. Like, this wasn't even the Elspeth Tyrell. This was Elspeth Knight Errant that I got from the Dole decks. And I got two just so I could have two copies of Elspeth and start making soldier tokens. With Elspeth Tyrell, I feel like I get a little more power out of her in Commander just because she makes the three soldiers as opposed to the one per turn. Like, I wouldn't normally play Bitter Blossom in Commander, but Elspeth Knight Errant kind of makes a worse... I don't want to say a worse Bitter Blossom because she's still a Planeswalker and her ultimate is really powerful. But outside of a Voltron, Knight Errant's really, really good, and I'm hoping the Modern Masters reprints bring her down. But Elspeth Tyrell I like better just because the life gain is relevant and just one life gain and she's ready to wrath the board in the next turn. But character wise, you really get into her story, and she's this knight who ran away from her Phyrexian prison, settled on Bant, and never wanted to go anywhere again. She was content to just live a life of peace. And then the shards start merging and she gets the hell out of there. She starts fighting in pits, starts picking fights, starts getting really angry with herself for abandoning the people she loves. And she gets recruited to Koth to go to Mirrodin and to just start kicking Phyrexian ass. She initially runs away again, which is really frustrating, especially for me as someone who believes in just standing up to things. But then she does start standing up. She does start standing on her own, and she starts fighting against her fears. And for me, just the courage it takes to face those horrible nightmares that haunt you each and every one of your waking moments, to go back and to aid people and to fight in a war against creatures that you thought were gone forever. I don't know. Elspeth is a really strong character for me, and she's my favorite. So, Calvin, who's your favorite Planeswalker?
If I'm going to have to say my favorite Planeswalker, I'm going to... let's put it like this. The automatic favorite Planeswalker for me is going to end up being a Johnny Vengeant. Everybody knows why. No need to discuss that. But if I'm going to talk about... if I'm going to be allowed to pick a Planeswalker to actually discuss, my personal Planeswalker to actually, personal favorite Planeswalker to actually talk about is Tezzeret. And the main reason I like Tezzeret the Seeker is due to the simple fact that he actually has, this whole concept of how to, tinker and manipulate artifacts and use various forms of metal to try to, just gain all kinds of advantage. And when I first started playing Magic, one of my favorite color was red in the beginning. And as we played Magic, I kept telling my brother and my friends that, technically Magic has six colors. Because I've always considered artifacts to basically be the sixth color. It's not really on the back of the card. It's not spoken about. But in my view, it's always been the answer to the life of green and the destruction of red and all the various things like that. And it just seemed to be a nice fit into the niche of what was going on. And Tezzeret is a Planeswalker that just kind of brings the old original Artificer in me back out. And I've actually built several decks around and with artifacts just because I've had Tezzeret the Seeker. And I've bought Elspeth versus Tezzeret?
Yep.
Just so I could get that foiled version of Tezzeret with the really messed up arm on the cover. And a few extra cards that had his artwork on it, because I liked the character so much. And the character in and of himself is basically a self-made man. And that's the other thing I actually really enjoy about him. He's pretty much, when you get into his character, he pretty much starts off as a slum dog from, what was it, Ravnica? That he was from?
Tezzeret was from...
he's from...
Esper.
He's from the Esper part of... Shards from the Alaris, but from the Alaris section, there it was.
Yep.
Because he got that Ephraim arm. And pretty much, like, as he was a kid, he was just constantly assaulted and abused and picked on for being the weakest one, but his brain allowed him to figure out a way to harness that anger into this massive, like, brain of intelligence, and he's used it to completely remove his own arm and forge it with Aether. Granted, what Nico Bolas has done with him after making him an agent makes him look kind of weak, but even in then, he still is doing everything he can to try to escape.
And finally, Brian, who's your favorite?
And it's a pretty badass character when you can actually outthink Nico Bolas and ridiculous. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
Going on around.
That's fine. Go ahead and finish up, Calvin.
No, I'm sorry. I'm done. You can just, like, you know. Actually, no, Tezzeret's cool. You can edit that onto the back and just cut that part off.
That's fine. Yeah, like Brian says in the chat, Tezzeret is literally a self-made man. Okay, so Brian, who's your favorite Planeswalker?
Oh, hard choice. Character-wise, probably Bolas. For all the history he has. And I haven't read any of the novels. I've started reading Alara Unbroken. And in the first chapter, he's just great, amazing, evil, hilarious.
Ooh, you should definitely read The Secretist. That's a really good one. Okay, so
so badass it doesn't make have to get up.
Hold on. What was that, Calvin?
He's so badass he doesn't even have to get out of his chair.
Okay, so go ahead, Brian. Who's your favorite card-wise?
Another hard choice. I think I have to go with Johnny Goldman.
Johnny
Again,
Goldman.
My necropotence addiction. His plus one says draw two cards.
I'm sorry, what?
Because of my necropotence addiction, I read any amount of life gain as many cards. So Ajani has plus one, draw two cards.
Ah, okay. I get it. Okay, I'm adding these to the show notes real quick. So,
get that card advantage.
So, any other thoughts on Planeswalkers before we start closing this out?
By rating right now, every version of Chandra is above every version of Jace, including Mind Sculptor.
Really? Gather ratings.
Gather, bro. Yeah.
Planeswalker is 37. So, just click on Chandra the Firebrand. Chandra has a rating of 4.29. And Jace the Mind Sculptor has 4.092. Huh. Well, to be fair, Jace did have a reputation for being a huge dick most of his life.
Gather has spoken. Chandra is better than Jace. You heard it here first.
That is a real quick good point, though. I'm actually really looking forward to seeing what the new M14 Chandra looks like. Especially since it looks like they're going to give her a little bit more focus in the core set.
Apparently, there's a new era coming, too.
Yeah, like, I said this before, but it's like I think they're really close with Chandra the Firebrand. She just lacks the punch that a Pyromancer needs. Did you have something, Calvin?
No. Just saying that Sandra's going to be wearing less clothes in a new corset.
Is she? I need to look at that.
That's what I'm going with.
I think I saw the art. I think the art was spoiled at one point. It was her standing over a volcano. Check that. Google search engine. Right. Chandra M14 art image shirts. No, I don't really see her wearing anything less.
Not in my mind, she's wearing less.
Yeah, I will say that. I will say though that again, not necessarily one of my favorite things that's come out of the MTG community was one of Polish's renditions of Chandra where he's got her wearing like light clothing and she like loses the heavy chainmail. Like, his explanation is that pyromancers want to stay back and throw fireballs and all that. And I'm like, no, you've got this wrong. Chandra isn't the stay back and ping you all day with stuff, even though that's what her cards do. She is very much a get up in your face and make big boom kind of thing. And when you've got that much shrapnel and debris flying around, you kind of need that armor to protect you.
Yeah, and you actually need to use the goggles, which apparently she doesn't.
Well, the goggles don't do
anything. She does sometimes. Oh, the goggles, they do nothing.
You're right about that.
So, that about does it for our discussion on Planeswalkers. I actually see us coming back to this topic again because, holy crap, we just spent like half an hour just discussing them in general, so this is definitely going to be continued at some point. I know everyone else has opinions on Planeswalkers, so go ahead and share them with us in the comments section. The next section we go to, Calvin's back with some more guild tech, looking at Azorius. The Knight of Obligation has a role-playing account.
Okay, everybody. It's now time for us to go back into the playing with the Ravnica mechanics that I've been dealing around with very recently. For those of you who don't know, I've pretty much been taking the mechanics from old Ravnica and the new Ravnica blocks and merging them together into a deck to kind of see what I could probably do with them, see if they were playing with. At this point, I've already done Golgari once. And now going into Azorius, which is the white-blue combination. And for those of you that don't know, Azorius's original mechanic was Fortcast. And Fortcast basically was this ability where a card could be revealed from your hand and maybe like had an additional stipulation like pay some mana, tap some creatures or whatever. Each card had something slightly different. But what it did was is you revealed the card from your hand as a part of the cost, and at the beginning of your upkeep, and only once during your upkeep each turn, you could get the effect. And it'd be along, something along lines like, say, let's just jump right into the first card that I have here. Sky Hazar. And Sky Hazar was a 4/3 flying human knight. It's three colors, white and blue. And it has, when it enters the battlefield, untap all creatures you control. But it has four casts of tap two untapped white and or blue creatures you control and reveal Sky Hazar from your hand. You could draw a card. So initially, this card basically allows you to get like a free draw at the beginning of your turn as long as you're able to tap down two guys of yours that are in the right color combinations. And Azorius's second ability from the new Return from Ravnica block, in case you guys don't know about it, you know, don't know if you're listening to this recently or sometime in a distant future. Sometime in the distant future. You know, like, you know, there are people out there that will go back and hit the archives. I know you're out there because you're the one I'm talking to right now. Azorius's ability in the Return to Ravnica block was Detain. And for those of you that don't know, Detain basically said that until your next turn, target creature can't attack or block, and its activated abilities can't be activated. So, say, for instance, with a card like Inaction Injunction, which is a sorcery. You pay a colorless and a white and a blue. You could detain target creature and opponent controls and draw a card. So it's kind of like you get to cycle the card and one dude can't really do anything until your next turn or the end of your next turn.
All right. Yeah, you just want to go ahead and talk about your impression of the mechanics individually?
We can go ahead. Real quick before I go into any further, or
let's go ahead and talk individually about the mechanics. Forecast. Going a bit into the history of things, being the magic historian that I am, because I happen to be one of those people diving into the archives from time to time. This is at a point in time where blue-white was actually really powerful in Standard. And design and development were kind of being asked to rein things back for them, kind of come up with an identity that wasn't just pure advantage, that would just push the color combination over the top and just completely break standard. So the Azores theme was pretty much flyers. They're police dudes, but they have flyers. But they still need a mechanic, and Forecast is a way to kind of give them card advantage in about a roundabout way. I'm going to actually, let's go ahead and look up some Forecast cards real quick if I can pull it. Because I actually tried to play with Hussar a few times and didn't really work for me per se. Tapping down a couple of dudes to draw a card is fine, kind of like an uncounterable Phyrexian Arena. But at the same time, I didn't really have a lot of dudes in my blue eye decks to really use the ability of. But stuff like Plumes of Peace, where they tap a creature, or Pride of Clouds, where you put a 1/1 blue and white bird token into play over and over again. You know, these are really small, really minor effects compared to the larger effects, like Skyscribing, which actually got reprinted in the Commander set. It let each player draw a card. It was like Jace's +2 ability. But the actual card is a pure draw X spell for you. So just really small ways that really, I don't know, it's incremental advantage. But you look at the Tang, and those abilities are a little stronger and a little more relevant in Commander because of so many cards that do shenanigans, especially when they're activating abilities. Kiki Jiki, Sisei, you know, just to name a couple of activated generals. Mayal the Anima, that's another big one. They still have a chance to respond and use those abilities on your turn when you try and target them with the Detain. But at that time, you're forcing them to do it at a time where they probably don't want to. I know that the Sisei player in my group is actively tutoring for stuff. And Detain, once I actually get that going, is really going to mess him up. Yeah, Forecast is a bit of an obscure mechanic because you don't really see a whole lot of these effects in Commander. Because Commander's the big spell format. It's where we play a lot of the huge spells. And a lot of these are really small. Like, Rite of Passage, that's a Forecast. That's an enchantment with Forecast that makes target creature with power 2 or less unblockable this turn. How often do you have guys with power 2 or less that you're just desperately want to get in for the damage?
Yeah, if I wanted to do that, I'd use the Spirit Endall from Aether Sight just to give it Shadow.
Yeah, that's another Forecast card. And that one doesn't have a power restriction. So, Calvin, I have to ask you, since this is the point of the segment, how did the two mechanics play together?
From my personal experience, after combining the two, I was trying to figure out what would be a good way to play them both together. Because last time when I actually tried this out with the Return for Ravnica abilities, I just kind of slapped them into a together to see what works. So this time I actually took a little more time to try to think about what would be the best ways to use it. And this time I actually chose to use Asperia, the Supreme Judge, as the legendary creature for the deck. Mm-hmm. And then I slowly went with a nice little pillow / blink deck. This way, the pillow fort would buy me enough time for the forecast to actually work, while the blink would allow me to get extra usage out of my detained creatures. And one thing I've actually come to realize is that when you get multiple uses out of the detained creatures, the forecast guys really do actually come in handy. For instance, like with Sky Hazar, the whole draw a card thing, it's perfectly fine when you have a 2/1 guy with detained, like the, what was it, Azorius Arrester, that you have no real intentions on attacking with because you know it's going to die, and you only really intend on blinking him back out and blinking it back in and out. So you have no problem like tapping him and
her. It's definitely her.
With the Azorius Arrester and the, what was the other one?
Soulsworn Druid.
The other two. Not the Swords one. Like, good one. It was a
Soulsworn Spirit. Yeah, Soulsworn Spirit and
No, actually, I actually kept Soulsborne Spirit and used that one more like of a pick. Because it has built-in like unblockability.
Yeah, it does.
So the good thing about the Soulsborne Spirit is you could like play it detaining and then equip it up. And you're sitting behind, have a nice picture just to kind of keep picking away at life points.
Yeah, Azorius Justicia, that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, and if needed, you can always blink it back out for the extra detain if you had to. Because of the various ways that the deck was going, I could easily use like the two Azorius, the Arrester and the Justicator, just so I could get an extra card at the beginning of the turn with the Sky Hazara and play down like another propaganda like effect. And I ended up having like what was it? What was the blink card?
Conjurer's Closet?
It was... No. It was, hold on. I have to go back to her deck. I know you were in here, damn it. That was actually an older card. Ah, there we go. Liberate. Because I had a copy of Liberate underneath the, the Digimon Scepter. And Liberate says, return target creature you control. Remove target creature you control from the game. At the end of turn, return that card to play under its owner's control. So I could easily like use the Azorius Arrester, tap it, draw a card, and then pay 2 mana, blink it out. At the end of my turn, detain your guy.
Hmm.
And if you combine that with like a Vencer... the Vencer Planeswalker, Vencer the Sojourner, you could use to blink out a detained person. And it gets a lot easier once you have, like, Lavinia of the Tenth. Because when she hits the board, you can just start detaining everything. And then the forecast cards don't really matter much, because you can just kind of use the forecasts to tap a target creature or get some extra value by drawing an extra card or revealing cards and drawing all the cards. And okay. What was it? Rite of Passage actually ended up being pretty useful as well for the two thing, because a lot of the detained creatures are actually pretty weak. And it took me a while to actually kind of realize, like, actually forecasting it instead of actually putting it on something was actually better than actually enchanting it. Because if I enchanted something, it would, like, go away and I'd never get to use it again. At least that way, if something happened, I can always turn one of my other detained guys into a small... like, way to pick away at life points.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, because the enchantments are worthless on dudes that you intend on blinking. So, having a repeatable way to give them unblockability, and yet still maintain their ETB effects, that's actually really nice.
Yeah. And what was it? The other forecast card I found to be pretty interesting was Spirit and Doll. It's two colors and a white. It's a spirit. It's a 2/1. It has shadow. Then when you forecast, you pay a colorless and a white and reveal it, and target creature gains shadow until end of turn. And the best part about this one was is that if you had like the commander out, like Hesperia, you could easily just pay 2 mana a turn to give Hesperia shadow, and now I can guarantee like 6 general damage whenever needed.
And it just takes one exalted card to turn that into a 3-turn clock. Wow. Like Ardent Plea, you can just play Ardent Plea, cascade into something, and then you have an enchantment that makes Hesperia a 3/5 whenever she swings.
No, she's already Hesperia's already a 6/4. She turned into a 7/5.
I thought that's what I said.
WRONG! No, I thought you said 3/5.
Regardless.
Yeah, whichever one.
Yeah, so
we'll leave it to the editor.
Yeah. So it sounds like you actually had a lot more... you had a much better time finding synergy between these mechanics than you did last time.
Oh, yeah, because with these two mechanics, the detain actually buys you time. And the forecast gives you something to do with the new time you just bought. And in certain cases, you can forecast and then detain to buy time. So it's not like each... It just seemed like the two worked way better together in sequence than when together in the deck. Whereas, like before, like I was saying with Scavenge and Dredge, you know, whenever I had the option to do one or the other, it's always ended up being just Dredge. Where in this case, I always kind of felt like, you know, I could cast another Detain guy because they're very low on a mana cost. But I can also Fortcast if I choose to now. So let me actually Fortcast and see what I get. And then, like, you know, after I Fortcast or tapped a guy or drew a card or gave something Shadow, I could then evaluate the board and be like, okay, well, now this guy is worth detaining because these other threats have been taken care of, or I now have an answer for these other issues as opposed to just, you know, going by the seat of my pants.
Yeah, it also bears repeating that, again, this is a little more planned out, whereas you can't... Well, these kind of more naturally play together. Scavenge does naturally play into with Dredge, but at the same time, you kind of need to build your deck more towards the Scavenge and use Dredge as an enabler, whereas these two just kind of really fit better together.
Yep. So I would say out of the mechanics that I've actually tried so far, I would actually say it's one of the better ones that actually works well when combined in the same deck. I can easily see myself kind of keeping a deck together and then just kind of like making a few alterations and use primary like control deck. But I'd have to actually like, you know, get a little better with like, you know, counters and stuff.
I will say though that there's a counter spell in Dissension. Let's see if I can find it real quick. Yeah. I will say real quick that this doesn't necessarily have to do with the mechanics themselves, but just with Azorius colors. Swift Silence is actually pretty decent if you're playing in a meta with Maelstrom Wanderer. Because it'll counter the Maelstrom and whatever spell he's dragging in with him. Which is the case with Double Negative. But Swift Silence lets you draw cards too. So, okay. We're going to go ahead and wrap this up. So, Calvin, how would you give this overall rating for the Azorius Guild? How are they doing?
I would give it like one of the higher ratings so far. Like, I've tried several different ones already, and out of the ones I've actually tried, this one actually like ranks up there very high. If I had to go with like a number out of like 5, I'd give it like a 4.5.
4.5.
Like, they really work. They really work really good as far as my view of it is. But you have to be like patient and into controlling stuff, and even for someone like myself, it's still actually pretty like easy to handle.
Okay, Brian, got any last things?
Not really. I think most of it's been mentioned already.
All right,
so
then.
Notice in my search for detainment spell, which doesn't actually have detain, but pretty much detains whatever you want.
All right, very good. So now that we're done with this, we're going to go into our final section for technology. We're going to do a retro cycle review of the Lauren 5.
Like, say real quick so that Will might just edit back in later.
Not really. Do you get all I had to say about the Guildmage?
No, we didn't get any of that.
Yeah, the Guildmage. Actually, I didn't mention that for the easy guide to detain, monocolored detain cards only detain creatures, and multicolored detain cards can do anything non-land.
You know what? I didn't even notice that.
So, tying back into our first segment, talking about Planeswalkers, we're doing the retro set review. The retro cycle. No, can't do a retro set review. That'd take too long. A retro cycle. Oh. Retro cycle review for the original Lauren 5. Ajani, Jace, Liliana, Chandra, and Garruk. Yeah, these are the ones that, if any player is familiar with Planeswalkers, they usually know these five at least, because these guys have been around the longest. So, the first one we're going to introduce you to is Ajani Goldmane, and that's going to be brought in by my man, Brian. So, Brian, tell us what Ajani does.
Okay, Ajani Goldmane, 2 white, Planeswalker Ajani, +1, you gain 2 life. minus one, a plus one counter on each creature you control. Those creatures gain vigilance until end of turn. And minus six, put a white avatar creature token on the battlefield. It has this creature's power and toughness surge equal to your life total.
So, what are your overall thoughts on the Ajani Golmain that starts with four loyalty?
Oh, yes. He also has four loyalty and art by Alexei Bricklow. I probably should have mentioned that.
All right, so you mentioned you liked the Ajani before, so...
Yeah, like I said before, I like the gain two life just because of my Necropotence addiction. It says draw two cards for me. But otherwise, gain two life, it's okay in some decks. Basically, if you're using it, you're probably just building up to his ultimate. For most people, his minus one's probably a bit more relevant. Giving all your creatures plus one in vigilance. Works well with token armies and such. His ultimate is Sarah Avatar.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. I've actually managed to get his ultimate off, although I will admit that I was cheating with the doubling season. But dropping Ajani Golmain and then getting two Sarah Avatar tokens is actually really... It's really good. I don't think I really... It's really saying a lot to say that.
I once got off with the...
This is true.
Yeah,
if you look, in the comments, Calvin's telling us about that Ajani would have been Gideon if they had thought of him sooner. I think that's contestable. Gideon's very much a soldier, whereas Ajani's just kind of the elder pride leader these days. You're right. I definitely think you're right on one point, Brian. The Mind's ability where you just give your whole team 1-1 counters and then give them all vigilance in the turn, that's definitely the biggest reason I see him getting played, especially in token decks. I still remember having crap tons of soldiers out and then insisting that I put a 1-1 counter on each different token. And I would watch people scoop just because they didn't want to deal with me putting a whole bunch of 1-1 counters on all my dudes every turn.
Killing with counters means something totally different with you, doesn't it, Will? But, me personally, I would have to say that I have never, and by that I truly do mean never, seen Ajani ever reach that six. I've never seen him do that. He's one of the planeswalkers that I would consider only really has one ability. And actually has two abilities. And his one ability is the give a plus one counter and vigilance to everybody, and the other ability is give Ajani one loyalty counter and skip his activation this turn. That's all he ever really seems to read around whenever I see him. There's like just keeping him alive so he can pump more tokens onto the guys.
Well, yeah, you might as well add everyone attacks Ajani, because as soon as they see you start taking him up, there's really only one thing you plan on doing with him. It's not like where you're playing Garrick Prime Hunter and you're playing the plus one because you get a dude out of it. You're really only getting the two life because you want to make the avatar.
Yeah, right. Everybody really wants that avatar. But, Ajani actually is one of the only planeswalkers that kind of really doesn't... Well, actually, not the original five. He was one of the ones that didn't protect himself, but Jace didn't do it either. And neither did Liliana, right? Because she only discarded and tutored. So yeah, he's one of the four mana planeswalkers that actually falls into that surprising that you actually got played because you really don't protect yourself. Where's your condom, Ajani? Where's your condom?
He's from the world of Naya. They do everything natural there. Haven't you ever seen the Discovery Channel? That's Ajani right there.
Yeah. Remember, he's a cat, so even if he had one, it would be pierced by the spines.
Ugh.
Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, you'd mentioned doubling his ultimate. I've done something similar. I had him out with the Rings of Brightheart. Then the next turn, I dropped a Disciple of Bolas.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you sacrificed one of the tokens and you got all that back.
Yeah. Obscene.
That is obscene. Mm-hmm. So the second planeswalker that we're going to go ahead and bring today is He's pretty much the poster boy for Magic. It's Jace Bellerin. Costs 1 double blue. Planeswalker Jace. Start to 3 loyalty. For a +2, everyone gets to draw a card. If you -1, target player draws a card, usually yourself, also known as the deuce draw, apparently. And his ultimate is a -10 that says target player puts the top 20 cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard. Real quick, guys, which version art do you usually prefer? The original, the special media version, or the Jace for Chandra? Because I know that the original Lauren art got him the name of Emo Jace.
I only have one, so I use the Japanese dual decks version, Anime Jace.
I do, but like Anime Jace a lot, yeah.
If I had it, I'd use the $130 book promo version.
Yeah, I really like the book promo version art better. But if I had to pick one that I actually like would play with, I pretty much play with Emo Jace. Just because I kind of like the fact that you really don't see his face. It's kind of like hidden, so you can kind of still pretend that, you know, that's you underneath that mask.
Jace has gone through a lot of evolution. He's one of the few planeswalkers that have 4 iterations of him so far. And a lot of the time, I see him being used as either a Howling Mind of sorts, or just as a really slow Phyrexian Arena. And when you do... Jace is one of those really political planeswalkers, because if you're busy playing Howling Mind and you're making everyone draw cards, people leave him alone. They like drawing cards. But as soon as they see you draw a card for themselves, it's like, oh, nope, I'm smacking him upside the head. I don't care what you do with them for the rest of the game. I don't care that you didn't want anyone else getting drawn cards. You didn't let me draw a card. Smack him in the head. That, and I've only ever seen him kill Mind Sculptors. Twice I saw someone else use their Jace Bellerin to kill a Mind Sculptor on the table, and that was it.
Pretty soon you won't be saying that at all.
Yes, with the new Planeswalker rule. I'm so excited by that.
About me not liking it here.
How could you not like that? I have seen... There's been just... Actually, we'll go ahead and get into this when we talk about Garruk. But there are just some Planeswalkers that are so inconspicuous with their effects that you don't really... that you completely forget that they're on the table to begin with. And Jace is actually one of them. Or at least Jace Bellerin is. Everyone notices when a Mind Sculptor is on the field. But... drawing a card isn't that big of a deal. I know that it kind of has that Mind Mage flavor that you're kind of sifting through different ideas and all that, but it's not that big of an effect, and people forget that he's there. You drop a Jace because you just need to be able to play something, and boom, it's gone. It's wasted. You accidentally killed something, and that sucks, because otherwise he's a dead card in your hand.
As far as like Jace Bellerin is concerned, I fully understand where you're coming from with the whole like him exploding and blowing up other Jaces. But usually, like when I saw him, he actually was just like the guy that you would see in a group hug deck that just kind of threw cards out around a table, and people would completely ignore him until he actually got to like 15 counters, and then someone's like, "Oh well, I'm gonna -10 this guy," and someone's losing 20 off the top, and it's like, oh yeah, I forgot he did something other than draw me a card.
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine with just plussing him for everyone to draw a card, because the only deck I use him in is a mill deck. So
I will say that Jace Bellerin got a lot better for me when Notion Thief came out.
Oh god.
Yeah, and I actually have done that before several times, where I've played Jace and let everyone draw a card, kind of, you know, I'm being nice, I'm letting everyone draw cards, and the next turn just drop the Notion Thief and be like, yes, I'm going to +2 to draw 4. That got ridiculous fast.
Or Consecrated Sphinx.
Well, no, with Consecrated Sphinx, you just lose the game.
Well, not with them together. But...
oh, yeah, yeah, Consecrated Sphinx with
Jace. With Consecrated Sphinx.
Yeah, then you draw 2 cards for everyone. So you net like 7 cards from one ability. So Jace, when used in conjunction with other cards, is deceptively powerful. Next card that we're going to be talking about is a girl that I'm kind of familiar with, because she seems to follow me everywhere I go, Liliana Vess. Liliana Vess, 3 double black, Planeswalker Liliana, +1, discards a card for target player, you -2, search your library for a card, shuffle it, and put it on top, so you basically tutor, and you -8, put all creature cards and all graveyards into play under your control. This is another one of those planeswalkers where I really only see her used for one thing, and that's for her tutor ability. The discard's a lot more relevant than a Johnny's Life Gain, but I only ever see and mostly ever use her for the tutoring ability. And kind of a meat shield, because you tutor once, and then people kill her, so you don't get that second tutor. On the rare occasions that you get the second tutor, you do get the second tutor, and she lives for the next round. You go up one to discard, and then you get one third tutor out of her. And that's really all I ever see her used for.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same for me. I've seen her ultimate go off a few times in reanimator decks, but other than that, she's basically just a tutor. I've never seen anyone discard with actual reason other than just to tick her up. Rheon and Karsten actually talked about it on their top 10 planeswalkers this week.
Yeah, that's actually really funny that this came out the same week as their video. We didn't collaborate on that or anything. It's just a happy coincidence.
As far as Lily goes, like, yeah, I've actually seen her go up with the discard, but that's only because I was using her with the intention to try to get the graveyard thing a couple of times. It's mainly what I end up doing with her most of the time is I tick her down to the point where she's just almost gone, and people would just like, oh, well, you know, she's not doing anything except for discarding a card from this point forward. And as long as you don't, like, draw attention to her, you just, like, target a player, make them discard a card, or make a joke about it, I'm going to make you discard a card, And once you're done with that, what ends up happening usually is like, okay, well, you go right ahead, you do your thing, and eventually she kind of gets really close to that 8 mana. Well, not 8 mana, 8 loyalty to actually be able to use her to get that graveyard thing going where you can take all the cards and all the creatures from the graveyards and put them on to your side. I've gotten it off twice. Which actually is actually kind of weird now that I think about it. Like, I've gotten her ultimate off more times than I've gotten a Johnny, and hers is lower than his is. And hers is higher than his is.
I think that has to do with the fact that she actually does something with her plus one. Because it's just discarding a card. Whereas with a Johnny, it's gaining you life, but the effect is so big and pertinent that he draws a lot of attention to himself. Now, when we finally get that Necromancer's Revenge card that won the You Make the Card contest number 4, I'm actually really looking forward to playing all 3 Lilianas. Well, no, not Liliana of the Dark Rose, because she doesn't do anything with it. I'm actually looking forward to playing with both discard lilies just to get some extra value out of that.
So which art did you vote for that? The one
I actually... Oh, did they start voting on the second ability yet?
This week it's...
So. Okay, I need to take a look at that. I just remember that I actually really liked Necromancer's Revenge, and I was voting for that all through the process. Okay, so going into our next play... Oh, real quick, though, I will say that I have had the fortune of opening a Liliana every time that she comes out with a new version. Like, when I first started playing, they were doing a M11, M11. And one of the first packs I bought had a Liliana Vest in it, which had me excited. Then I bought an Innistrad pack a little after Christmas, and it had Liliana the Veil, which I still have. And then the day I went to the core set pre-release last year, I bought a Yeva deck. Opened one of the packs that it came with, and he got Liliana of the Dark Realms. So that, I'm just convinced that Liliana's stalking me for some reason.
So hold on a second. So, wait, would you consider yourself to be a red mage?
Me?
Yes. So Liliana's been stalking me as well. She's been printed. I bought a box of Larwyn, and she was the only planeswalker I opened. Pre-released, and Liliana of the Veil was the planeswalker out of the 6 packs. And then when I was 13 fat pack, like the boost, the 10, like, was it like 10 packs in one thing, like the fat pack booster box thing?
Yeah.
Dark Realm from there. She's like, I'm afraid to open product when she's around now.
Hey, if you have Liliana's you want, I'll be glad to take them.
Yeah, send some of that my way. I've only opened a Lorwyn version of her.
So our next planeswalker is someone Calvin's going to introduce us to, and someone who packs quite a bit more punch than the other planeswalkers in this cycle, Chandra Nalar. Calvin, tell us about Chandra.
Yeah, boy. Chandra Nalar. She is three colorless, double red, planeswalker Chandra, Lori T of 6, and she has +1. Chandra Nalar deals 1 damage to target player, minus X. Chandra Nalar deals X damage to target creature, and then minus 8. Chandra Nalar deals 10 damage to target creature and to target player and each creature he or she controls. Now, one thing about Chandra Nalar is out of this cycle, she is the first one that actually, like, quote-unquote, protects herself. Because she's the first one to actually, like, directly affects the board when she shows up. She can either start hitting your opponent directly for 1 point of damage, making herself almost hard, very hard to kill by getting her to 7. Or she can easily come up and, you know, she can do a good 6 points of damage to target creature. And, what was it, Lava Axe is 5 mana, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so you can easily, like, pay 5 for Chandra, minus 5 her, and use her to Lava Axe. Let's just go with Baneslayer Angel, because that's the first creature with 5 defense I can think of. And you can just go right ahead and kill her, and she'll still live to tell the tale, because she's at 1 point of loyalty.
Yep, if you need to, you can just minus 6, and there you go, you just took out a Titan.
Yep.
And
she can...
Yeah, I've done...
After you, like, use it, you can ping the player. If she gets high enough, you can always just, like, instead of, like, ultimating her and doing 10 damage to everything, you can easily just use her to go after one specific thing. If there's, like, a... Say there's a stuffy doll on the field that's, like, got your name on it. So you don't accidentally, like, burn yourself out.
Of the planeswalkers, she's actually been one of the slightly more confusing for beginners, because some people don't read the cards, and they keep assuming that the +1 does damage to target player or creature, which is why I'm glad they did that with the Firebrand. But yeah, that just +1 seems a little deceptive if you're not careful and you're not actually reading what your cards do. But I definitely played Chandra just for the minus X ability, and have used her for my Primal Surge deck just to have that bit of spot removal.
Might have to get one for my Primal Surge deck. I've never actually used her.
No, the minus X is totally legit. There's a ton of stuff in Commander that kills. Consecrate, Sphinx, Sheoldred. Maybe not Sheoldred.
Takes out most commanders.
Yeah. Takes out Kalia, Sisse. Oh yeah, she does kill Sheoldred. Awesome. Drana.
She takes out basically all the major commanders that can be targeted. She can pretty much take out
anything you can target except for maybe Elesh Norn.
Yeah. Right. And even then, all you'd have to do is tick her up once, and then she's ready to kill Elesh Norn. And by the time Elesh Norn could drop, she'll probably be at, like, 8. And she can wipe out their whole field. So, finally, we have Garruk Wildspeaker, who Calvin is also going to introduce us to.
Yes. Garruk, the Wildspeaker. Two colorless, double green. He's a Planeswalker Garruk who starts off with loyalty of 3. And he has a +1 ability, untap 2 target lands, and a -1 of put a 3/3 beast creature token onto the battlefield, and a -4 of creatures you control get +3/+3, and trample until end of turn. Garruk is basically the Planeswalker from the group that, from my understanding, was the one that made me want to come back to play Magic when I left. One of the reasons why I actually came back during Larmin was because I was interested in how the Planeswalker cards actually worked. That I was actually looking for something other than Yu-Gi-Oh! And Garruk just was this extremely strong powerhouse of a card, where it's like you go like turn 1 land into a land royal, turn 2 land, and you can already had 3 mana. And if you could get Garruk down on turn 3, and what would end up happening is, like, once he's down, he gives you 2 mana of what you paid for him back. So he kind of is the original 2 mana Planeswalker. And when you actually got to that point, all you had to do is tick him up once. him up one time, and he was already ready to explode on you with an overrun. It's a 4-mana overrun that you kind of have to, like, it looks like it's basically a 4-mana overrun with suspend one.
So, kind of going back to what I was talking about with Jace, some planeswalkers are just really innocuous. People just, for whatever reason, leave them alone. And Garruk's one of them. I have played Garruk to kind of ramp and help out my mana issues before, and then had him just killed randomly because someone dropped a Primal Hunter and they were playing on drawing cards or making a dude, and I had to remind him, dude, you just killed our Garruks by playing yours. And wow, I am not going to miss that when the new Planeswalker rule comes around.
Yeah.
He just doesn't draw the hate. Unless you have, like...
I have no idea what you're talking about, sir. I have never seen a Garruk Rout's Wild Speaker show up without hate being on him, except for, like, when it's other major Planeswalkers around.
No, Garruk's run wild here. Like, all people ever do is untap stuff with him. Unless you're using it on, like, a Gaia's Cradle, people don't seem to mind.
Yeah,
He's always been in, like, a token deck, where it's like, he comes down, he gets to plus one, and you know next turn that overrun is coming online.
Yeah,
so
that's
I've always seen it as, like, a shock or a bolt or... Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Brian.
Go ahead.
I'm basically saying the same thing.
No, go ahead. Like,
yeah,
your
go,
mind here, sir.
Go ahead, Brian. We need you to contribute.
Let the world hear your beautiful voice.
Yeah, I've never seen a Garruk stick unless he's really well protected. He's usually killed as soon as he comes down. Then again, I've only seen him in token decks in my group, so it usually means death if he gets off.
Okay.
I've never actually seen him just used for the mana ramp. I mean, the mana ramp is nice, and I've seen him kind of go with the, oh, I'm going to mana ramp. Oh, no one's going to do anything. Okay, I'm going to mana ramp some more. Oh, no one's going to do anything. Now I'm going to make a token. Mana ramp. It's like he's always, like, playing around with the overrun effect. And the only time I've never seen him actually used as the overrun is when he's already been pumped to, like, 6, so he can overrun and stick around.
One of the things I love about Garruk is that he does make tokens. This one makes beast tokens. Primal Hunter makes beast tokens, but in Ultimate, it's worm tokens. And the Relentless makes wolf tokens. I just love that we have a Planeswalker that's going to consistently make tokens that aren't just a bunch of 1-1 dudes. Like, Elspeth makes tokens, and Sora makes tokens now. But again, 1-1 dudes. Garruk brings out the beasts.
And the wolves. Don't forget the wolves.
Beasts and the wolves, and the worms.
It's probably worth noting that he's also the only one that was printed in the Commander precons.
Yeah, because he's bad ass.
Okay.
He's really awesome. Oh, love that guy.
So now, homosexual
way.
Calvin, I thought we had something special. Okay.
It was all a lie. I was just using you to get the Garruk.
Now that we're done talking about the Planeswalkers and just gushing over some of our favorites, we're going to go ahead and rank them. Calvin, how would you rank your 5?
If I was going to rank them, me personally, I put Garruk at the top of the list. Because, you know, he's Garruk. He protects himself in such an awesome way. If I was going to go with a number 2, I would have to go along the lines of, say, Jace. Jace Bellerin would be a nice number 2. Or, you know, like, I really love the card drawing. Sandra falls right in the middle because, you know, she does have to do 1 damage to a player, which never really helps much in Commander because it's only a ping. But she can take out creatures, and if left alone, can, like, wipe a board. Next one I would go with in the list of 5, I'd probably put on Liliana, because I've been used to actually playing around with black and using the various things to, like, tutor her for, and I usually have her in my Necromancer deck. So she's a nice themed Necromancer. And that pretty much leaves a Johnny bringing up the rear. Or at least that's my ranking.
All right. So, Brian, who do you rank?
At the tough, I'd probably put Liliana because she's a tutor. Her other abilities don't matter, but she's a tutor, so she gets high ranking. Second, Jace, he's card advantage, and card advantage is always nice. In third and fourth, Garrick and Ajani are kind of tied for their overrun effects. Both of them really deadly, but Ajani gets his first, and Garrick's is more likely to kill you. So I don't really have a solid three and four ranking for them. And I'd put Chandra last. She's removal, but there's other removal that is also better generally.
And finally, I will kind of agree with Brian on a lot of points. I do put Liliana on top because she does tutor. And she tutors in a way that sets up a lot of my miracle cards. I can go ahead and set up Reforged Soul in my Kalia deck. And I can... Well, okay, that's the only miracle card I run in my Kalia deck. But she does set up a lot of things. And the discard actually is relevant from time to time. With number two, I'm putting it in Garruk because the dude just does everything. He ramps, he catches you back up, and he makes dudes to protect himself. And they're big dudes, too. Plus, you have that innocuous feature, so he's actually going to survive a little longer, depending on your playgroup. My number three is Jace Bellerin because drawing cards, it's pretty good. Number four, I'd put Ajani because... I don't really know what it is about this Ajani in particular. I just remember having fond memories of having 20 tokens on the field and putting a 1/1 counter die on each of them. Like, literally having a big bag full of dice and taking the time to put one on each one of them. And then watching people go, can you just put one on all of them? Like, no, sir. I had to represent an accurate board state here. And finally, I will put Chandra up just because, I don't know, that plus one really annoys me for some reason. Like, if they had put target player or creature for the plus one on the original Chandra, I think that would have been fantastic. Because then she would have had, like, small bursts and then she could just do one big one. But now there's Firebrand who kind of paints and does the reverberate thing. I don't know. She's just kind of the least impressive of the five. So there you have it. We've given our rankings. I'd actually like to hear from you in the comment section below. Next up, we're going to go into the outro. So this has been Season 10, Episode 6. I want to thank everyone for joining me here today. Calvin, Mr. Co-host, thank you for showing up.
No problem. Took a little while to get here, but I'm here, and that's all that matters. And I didn't die on my pizza.
Yes, I would hate to have to try and reach through my laptop screen to perform the Heimlich. Brian, thank you for joining us today.
Yep, anytime. Like I said, I have no life. So if you ever need a third co-host, I can co-host whatever. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. So, as always, I like to pass out the contact information. Ryan, if people want to reach you, how can they do that?
I'm on Twitter, ChaosMTG, Gmail, ChaosMTG, comments section on the site, of course. I always have a CommanderCast Facebook page open in a tab somewhere. So, basically wherever.
Alright then. Calvin, if people want to reach us here at CommanderCast, how can they do that?
If they want to reach us here at CommanderCast, they can go to CommanderCast.com or they can email us at CommanderCast@gmail.com. There's also CommanderCast on Twitter. You can go there. You can hit us with CommanderCast over there. And also at CommanderCast, right?
Yep.
There's CommanderCast on Facebook, which is ran by Judson, right?
Yep.
And let's see, any other way to connect us. I think that's it as far as Command is concerned. I'm not sure about Google. There may be a Google Plus account that's just completely and totally dead.
Alright, they just want to reach you in particular? They just want to ignore me entirely?
Oh, yeah. If you really just want to completely bypass them and go straight, you know, bypass the middleman and go straight to the source, you can go right ahead and just hit at Captain Red Zone on Twitter, CaptainRedZone@gmail.com. Yeah, you can find me on Google Plus, but chances are I'm just going to be like, raise an eyebrow and be like, huh, I didn't know that you can get a message from the Never Realms. And then I'll just keep moving.
So that about wraps it up here. Again, go ahead, leave some comments down below. We love getting that feedback. If you have topics or suggestions for topics or even show themes, I guess, go ahead and hit us up. I'm always happy to take those. We're about ready to wrap this up. So, as always, let's get it!
Madagascar.